Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the only rugby podcast that is almost as pointless as a third place playoff. The only rugby podcast that has now almost been through the entire 2011 World Cup 10 years on.
The only one we know of, that is.
The only one we know of. Nick Easton might have been doing another one alongside his Sex Life podcast,
yeah.
I am Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me. I'm joined as ever by
Will Owen or Will Owen, whatever you want to call me.
And also, as teased previously, it's been a long time coming. We're finally from Blood and Mud and, I was going to say Rugby Shirt Watch, Rucked Mag now, the one and only Mr. Josh Gardner. How are we doing?
Hello there, Josh Gardner, or that cunt, as some people call me.
I'm exclusively going to call you that for the rest of this podcast.
That's fine, I'm used to it.
Is there any particular rugby journalist calling you that this week?
Not this week, no. But I mean, no. It is only Tuesday, so... And I did just say something quite spicy about Exeter on Twitter. So by the time this is finished, who knows what's happened, to be honest.
Like I said, like, we've been, you know, I think I asked you the better part of a year ago about doing this. And we managed to pick the only week in which no major high profile rugby people have had a go at you on Twitter.
It's great. Look, I'm choosing to decide that they're somehow linked. So thank you for that. They've given me a break.
I've been building up to this.
Let's leave him alone for this week. Yeah, you know, he's got the squinch thing on. We'll just let him. Yeah, yeah.
It'd be very draining for him, having to look over the quarterfinal. No, not the quarterfinal. My brain's automatically filled in a more pointful game than the third place playoff is automatically deleting this.
I mean, you said something in the Wales semi-pod, which I think is really insightful about world rugby. And or the IRB, as they were then, fundamentally misunderstanding the appeal of rugby.
Yes.
And that it's not about tries and highlight reel stuff or Super Rugby would like sell out every week, you know, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
What we like is compelling, intense, competitive, dramatic games with something on the line. And there is nothing more contrary to that entire ethos than a fucking bronze final.
What are your memories of the bronze final? If you have any at all, I think I already know the answer to this question.
Well, this is in saying, you know, tell I've done my homework in said semi-final pod, you said, Robbie, and I think you said as well, Will, that you basically just stopped paying attention to the game after the Sam red card because you just stopped thinking about it. I feel like my disassociation lasted for the entire rest of the tournament. Because, I mean, like, obviously I watched everything else in this tournament, but I was so devastated and just frustrated and just angry about everything that had happened in that game. Like, I barely remember anything. And like I said to you, Robbie, I don't think I've ever watched the third place game because I had no memory of anything about it. Like, I had no idea of the score. I couldn't even remember who we played without looking it up. I even created a constructed reality, right, in my head where I thought that we basically just got dicked in the bronze match like we did in 2019 because we were so broken and battered, we basically gave up. But none of that's true. Like, and in fact, I went back and I checked the official record, i.e. my tweets from 2011.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems that not only did I watch this game, I pretty much gave a running commentary of everything that went on, including going into depth about how shit James Hook was playing for the entire thing. But somehow, the entire match and everything around it was like Men in Black from my fucking consciousness to the point where, like, yeah, I am all intents and purposes a blank canvas for this game. I came into it with absolutely no memory whatsoever, and very little of it was jogged as I watched it again. It was like, oh yeah, I remember that. No, I don't remember anything. Literally nothing.
Do you recall who won the 2011 World Cup or any subsequent Rugby World Cups?
I mean, yeah, I remember
any other sporting matches, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't like I sort of like suddenly developed Parkinson's or something. It was like, you know, I was, you know, I came back in the room by the time the final came around. Mm. But like, certainly that game just has just been expunged from it's like it didn't happen, which I kind of wish was true of the semi final.
Yeah, yeah, but it's that kind of joke, isn't it? It's the joke, you know, a lot of Ireland fans make about the All Blacks game in 2013, about this semi final for Welsh fans. And yeah, again, I've automatically assumed we're talking about the semi-final, not the bronze final. That joke of, oh, it didn't happen, didn't happen. You went there. You went the extra level. You know, you had a hypnotist come and...
We were so tempted. You under. When we started this podcast, I mean, we were so tempted to just park it about like 45 episodes and have a punchline and just not do the semi-final and just leave everyone waiting. But no, we had to go and do it.
I mean, I don't blame you because, I mean, even though we were to do the third plate, I couldn't not sort of go back over... the semi for this. God, it's just, it doesn't get any less miserable with the passage of a decade.
Like, how did you find that?
Yeah.
Not fun at all.
It's not, is it?
It was more annoying. Like, I was annoyed about the Sam red card. I'm more annoyed about everything that went on around it with, you know, the World Rugby sort of changing the guidelines and not telling anyone and all that sort of stuff. And it was, obviously, you look at that tackle and you go, yeah, fair fucks.
Yeah, like,
it's a red, you know, it was, should have been a red card, even if it, you know, wasn't a couple of weeks before. But everything else in that game is so annoying. James Hook is so annoying in that game. Oh, Adam Jones getting injured in that game is so fucking annoying. Like, I did a sort of like little reverie where I just sort of looked back and thought, what if instead of waiting until half time in against Ireland in February 2012, Warren Gatland had decided in June 2011 to go to Lee Halfpenny. You know what, Lee, you kick really well.
Yeah.
You should probably be the first choice goal kicker for Wales.
Yeah.
Imagine a different world that would be. And although we'd probably beaten South Africa and then have had a very different path to the final that I'm not sure we'd have got through. So
that's true.
Yeah. I mean, we've had people asking after that pod, sort of, oh, has it been therapeutic for you? Has it actually genuinely helped watching that back? And it was just like, in a way, yes, but I wouldn't recommend it because it means watching the game. It's so much easier to just not think about it and pretend it never happened. I'm complaining at us for starting this podcast. So this is completely our fault. And I recognize that, but still.
It was interesting, actually, because obviously, like, you guys have had the ITV feed for most of the games, but unsurprisingly the bronze final is not one that they've decided to keep permanently encased in amber, so the only thing we could find was the like Aussie Fox feed. And it's really interesting at the start of that broadcast hearing the sort of Southern Hemisphere perspective on the Wales semi-final defeat, which is extremely like contrary to the whole, like, pretty much everyone in the Northern Hemisphere was kind of like, you know, one way or another Wales were robbed. And yet, sort of straight off the bat in the broadcast, the guy's just like, well, I mean, they got their captain sent off and they missed five shots of goal, so they only got themselves to blame then. Fair fucks, yeah.
I really enjoyed Greg Clark's take on it in the commentary, where they were running through the Welsh team for the bronze final, and they go, oh, the back row, Lydia, Faletau, Ryan Jones, you know, Faletau moves to seven, so on. Oh, Phillips, he's been in really good form.
Oh, no, I've got the clip of this. This was a vital moment for me. I love this. A perfect summation of what took place.
Quarters and the semi-finals. Mike Phillips is the star for Wales. Scored an individual try in wonderful form. James Hook on the other side of the coin was actually hooked halfway through the test because he was rubbish. These two...
Says James it all, really, doesn't
was
it?
Hooked at halftime because he was rubbish. Yeah. And that was... like, I mean, I remembered the hook started again because I remember being outraged by it. Because he was rubbish. And you know what?
Stephen Jones was clear. Yeah, he continued to deliver exactly what he had delivered for most of the World Cup so far, which is not being very good. I love James Hook a great deal. And he will always be a player that has a huge place in my heart because he's one of those few players that I can genuinely say, I watched you when you were fucking 18 years old and playing for Neath and thought you were going to play for Wales one day. And he fucking did. And I felt smug as fuck. However, this World Cup really did sort of it put a sort of a cocked hat on his career, didn't it?
Yeah.
As a Wales player. Even though he sort of had the odd comeback after that.
I mean, that there's a point about half an hour into the commentary, for the Australian commentary, where they acknowledge, if Rhys Priestland was playing, we'd be getting battered right now.
I mean, yeah. My history of James Hook, I don't know if it is well documented or not, but it certainly happened that I've had public interactions with James Hook. But he was one of my first favourite players. You know, when I first probably got into rugby, he was one of my real favourites. Oh, he was maybe my, you know, alongside Shane. And I was such a huge fan of him. And then that slowly waned. I don't know if it was his form falling off or it was me learning more about rugby. But the two seemed to go hand in hand.
I mean, he certainly, there was a time there where James Hook was legitimately an excellent player and had earned his place onto the British and Irish Lions in 2009.
Yeah. Oh, although,
after that, though, woof.
There's a point where Greg Clark says that James Hook didn't miss a kick over the three tests for the British and Irish Lions.
Hmm. Yeah, which, well, it's quite easy to do that when you get sent in with concussion before the test even starts.
Yeah, when your only contribution was sitting on the bench and not getting on. Like, it's quite easy to not miss a kick. But thank you, Greg.
Yeah, I guess he's got a point. Like, Ross Ford didn't miss a kick on that Lions series either.
True Lions.
I missed no kicks on the 2013 Lions tour.
Yeah, in fact, my international goal kicking record is absolutely unblemished. So far, I've never missed one. So. Yeah. In your face, Johnny Wilkinson and Chris Patterson.
Never that one between the posts that cursed this whole World Cup.
Of course. Should we look at the Australian team?
Should we look at the Wales team.
Well, this is an Australia team, isn't it?
Yeah.
How did this team go so wrong?
I'm not going to lie. I am looking at this team now, and I didn't realise Lachie Turner played until looking at this lineup here.
Lachie Turner didn't.
That's the best of us.
I'm looking at the wrong game. I've got the wrong team sheet up in front of me. That's why I didn't realize.
Shane Williams' last game.
Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense. It's also for some reason got Lee Halfpenny listed at 10. That is not the game I was looking at.
Which is an experiment I always wanted Wales to try at least once. Why not? Yeah.
The Cardiff Blues did it that once and they scored a try against Toulon in the last minute where he's going.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I was there that day. What a game.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
This is the first of six games Wales and Australia would play against each other in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them were enjoyable from a Welsh point of view.
No. I hated every single one of these, particularly the 2012 vintage where we lost to that Quade Cooper thing after Lee Halfpenny, and Lee Halfpenny killed himself trying to stop it.
Curtly Beale, rather. Yeah.
And then, I was there that day. And
oh, no.
Literally. As we were standing there in silence and desolation, watching Lee Halfpenny be stretched off the field and still waiting for the game to end because they couldn't take the conversion until Lee Halfpenny was off the field, my mate looked at his phone and went, "Man, England are just beating the fucking All Blacks."
Oh, man.
And then we just sat there for about 10 minutes. I just didn't say anything.
Day.
It was genuinely one of my worst days ever. Like, we lost to Australia in the last second. And then England beat the All Blacks.
And because it came after those five losses where two of them were in the last minute already.
Yeah.
And then one of them, you know, had the Shane try in the last play. I suppose there were scores in the last play in almost all of them.
There was the Mike Harris winning kick. Remember him?
Oh, fucking Aussie Mike Harris, who was basically the reverse Quade Cooper, but shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was. He was like the yin to Quade Cooper's yang.
Yeah.
He was like the 30% Quade Cooper was missing, formed into another player.
I think he was basically one of those kickers in American football who you just sub on when you need a kick at goal. And you sub him off and he goes completely missing.
Like Ty Gleeder is now.
Yes. Sure.
He's left the New England Free Jacks. And Ronan the Gar was offered to be, I suppose, as well.
I guess so.
And wasn't Lee Halfpenny at one point?
Something like that, yeah. We said we were going to look at the Australian team, didn't we?
Yes.
So
the good news is, Anthony Fainga's dropped the bench, who has been really vintage throughout this World Cup. But it's a really, you know, really good back line. They brought in Berrick Barnes in the centre. They've brought Adam Ashley-Cooper inwards. And they risked playing Curtly Beale at fullback when he was clearly already broken and not fit to play in this game. But they thought, well, we're already at the World Cup, so we might as well give him a go. And we got maybe one fun run out of Curtly Beale before he went off injured.
Yeah, it was the fun run, and then he just like tried to run a dummy line and was like, "Yeah, I'm done, lads. See you later."
Yeah, And I love that they put both Anthony Fianga and Rob Horn on the bench. And as soon as one of them went down, it's like, right, Rob Horn, on you go, on you go. Yeah, sit down, Anthony.
Get him off quickly, no. Before Ant can get his bloody tracksuit off.
Yeah.
The other big change is Scott Hagenbotham comes in, who was one of those players. There's always one for every nation that every fan wants to be in the team because he was playing well at club level, but you couldn't quite bring yourself to drop Rocky Elson. But for some reason, Bill McCallum will play every game. And just no one would notice he's slid into the team again. He was just always there. So Higginbotham comes in.
Bench. Yeah.
And the other, I suppose, story is Nathan Sharp winning his 100th cap in what was supposed to be his final game.
Yeah, no chance.
Was it ever?
Yeah.
So
this has been this Australia team is basically a who's who of players who will turn up in Europe in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Like Barry, like Ashley Cooper, Kirtley Beale, James O'Connor, Pocock, McCallum and Horwell, Higginbotham. Quade Cooper and Will Genia are both 23 at this point, and you just think, fuck me, how good are these two going to be if they keep playing together for the next 5 or 6 years? And the answer is, Will Genia will still be pretty good. Quade Cooper will be Quade Cooper.
It's amazing looking back on it how quickly Quade went off the boil.
Mm.
And I think this World Cup was a big turning point in that.
Yeah, when he gets the knee. I mean, there's a horrendous commentator's curse when they're coming down the tunnel where he's like, what can we expect from Quade Cooper tonight? And the answer is about 12 minutes.
Yes.
And then a horrendous ACL injury.
There's a great point at the end of the game when Phil Kearns says, and you know, it's not like Phil Kearns to make poor takes, but he says, Quade Cooper, mark my words, player of the tournament at the Rugby World Cup 2015. He went to that World Cup and was second choice to Bernard Foley.
Yeah.
And Australia got to the final with Bernard Foley at 10.
Yeah, playing Foley very well.
In the form of his life.
Yeah.
But play the tournament. It was a weird one. They gave it to him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This game also came a few days after the shortlist for World Player of the Year was named.
Yes.
Can either of you remember who was on that shortlist?
Welsh players, and I was fuming.
Yeah.
I remember that.
So I wonder if Sam Warburton would have been on the list, but they took him off after the red card.
Yeah. Well, he got 3-match ban, didn't he, Sam Warburton? And I remember thinking at the time that if Wales had won that game, they probably would have just revoked it and just said, like, look, you can play the final, mate. Don't worry about it. Whereas after Wales lost, it was just kind of like, well, we've kind of got to ban him now, haven't we? And, you know, they did, rightfully so, for 3 matches, which is why Toby Faletau ended up playing his only test match thus far as a flanker.
Yeah.
There was a whole push to, because obviously Tipps wasn't in the squad at this point, but Tipps had also just got banned for a tip tackle against Munster the previous week. So even if they'd wanted to have called him up, he was also getting banned for 3 matches. There was talk, and it wasn't crazy talk because he'd only just retired, that Gatlin should get Martin Williams down from the fucking pundits booth and slap a fucking Wales jersey on him, and why not? And frankly, I'd have enjoyed that because he was on 99 caps at that point.
Yeah.
And that would have been his 100th.
Yeah.
Whereas Justin Tipperick was on 1 at this point. Yeah. He just played the 1 against Argentina in the warm-ups.
They should have got Gavin Thomas back, frankly, after the previous summer when he came back in, got sent off for punching Sam Whitelock.
We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago of how glorious Gavin Thomas's late career was.
Yeah.
In that he again became one of those players like Nick Cudd, I always loved, you know, players who were brilliant at club level, but you looked at them and you knew instantly they would not work at test level. But
100%.
You know, we had a little run where Tippett wasn't in the picture yet, Warburton got injured, Martin Williams was injured, everyone else was Robin Southern Taylor had retired, which was a huge travesty. We had no other options. So Gatlin went, go on then, you know, called Gavin Thomas up, played okay in the first test, and the second test got a red card for punching Sam Whitelock in the face. But that is your legacy.
Yeah.
You know, barely played for the Dragons again after that. That was him done. He retired.
That's the best way to see out your Wales career.
Yeah.
This guy's probably going to win a couple of World Cups. Not a fan of him.
Yeah.
Give him a swift
arguably,
right hook.
That's what Ross Moriarty should have done after he got sent off against Argentina a couple of years ago. You know, it's not going to get better than you getting sent off for doing a full-on WWE chokehold on someone, mate. So just knock it on the head.
This is the thing I wondered. If we had, like, the ghost of Ross Moriarty or Gavin Thomas just wandering around injuring all the Australians in this game.
I mean,
because basically their full backline go down injured without touching anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think they're all non-contact injuries.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, for all of the talk of Wales being fucking down to brass tacks, and they were, you know. Mm. Like, it's not like by about 20 minutes in, Australia weren't already on those brass tacks as well.
Yeah. So, Curly Beale, Quade Cooper chucks a ball at his knees, and that causes his knee to pop, and he then runs on, continues his run beyond the try line, and just falls over and is lying in a heap, goes off injured. Quade Cooper then himself, about 5 minutes later, is about to run into contact. His knee goes, and he's still going to run into Luke Charteris.
Quade Cooper like steps so hard he snaps his own ankles.
Yeah,
there was part of. Do you remember
he
when
breaks
Quade,
the telephone box?
Like about 2007-ish, 2007, 2008, when Quade first came through in Super Rugby.
Yeah.
Like there was like it was the first time that like YouTube and a player had sort of combined into sort of he was like the first like YouTube highlight player.
Right.
And it was all just Quade doing ridiculous goose steps, but not actually achieving anything with those goose steps. Just sort of doing them and like doing the hitch step thing and then just getting tackled.
There's something so cleanly metaphorical there.
Yeah, and so I just absolutely loved to hate Quade Cooper from that moment on. So I can live with it.
He also had a really dumb haircut about that time.
Yeah, he did. He was one of the earliest sort of offenders of the sort of spiky at the front, mullet at the back situation, which, I mean, Shane Williams went there as well. You know, we can't throw any stones there. But
his haircut looked like on an N64 game when they were trying to make a head shape with what the polygons they had.
Yeah, he's basically a low poly haircut guy at that point. It was really fucking bad, though.
It was like they imported him from Rugby 2000 on PS1.
But they haven't changed any of the models.
No, he just appeared in real life. And they just keep spamming the side stick that lets you do a sidestep.
I mean, that was his early career at the
round. On those games, it's always the best thing to just run sideways as the fly half until eventually the gap opens up. And that pretty much was metaphoric of Quade Cooper's early career, I think. So it makes sense.
Just constantly spamming the same button over. It's like on Rugby Challenge when you throw the dummy and it causes everyone to slip off you. That's what Quade Cooper thinks is going to happen. Yet he's been thrown into the real world. It's like an 80s cartoon. He's been sucked out of a video game and made to live in the real world.
Thing is, he gets away with it, but James Hook has the exact same approach. Throw a dummy and everyone will go away from you.
James Hook also just tries to do a handoff instead of a sidestep. And yes, don't get me wrong, he had a powerful handoff in his day, but he was not like...
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Should we 22 minutes into this podcast start talking about the game? Do you reckon?
No.
We talked around.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
It's funny you should mention Rugby Challenge because do you know what video game franchise was reborn just one day before this game came out? I mean, you can probably guess because I just said it.
Is it Rugby Challenge?
It is. Jonah Lomu's, the first new Jonah Lomu Rugby Challenge was released on the 20th of the month.
Why?
Wow. A long, long time after. Yeah, it was on the Rugby World Cup one came out in August.
Mm.
But this one came on the day before the Rugby World Cup final, but was a much fucking better game.
I remember on the Thursday walking to Granger Games, which was within walking distance,
R.I.P.
Now defunct,
and
asking if they'd have a copy of Jonah Lomu Rugby Challenge over the counter as an awkward 16-year-old, and the guy behind the counter going, "We've just had the order in," pulling up a copy, and me going, "Brilliant." Him saying, "Do you want to reserve a copy?" I said, "No, I'll just pop by and get one tomorrow." And I popped back, and they had only got in 3 copies, and they'd all sold. Oh. So we did not get a copy that weekend, and we ended up having to order one from some obscure website that had them in stock. Because apparently they'd only released like 16 copies in the UK.
I pre-ordered one from Amazon, which I think is the first time I'd ever pre-ordered anything from Amazon. Mm. And they obviously fucked something up because even though the game didn't come out until the 20th, it literally, and I'm not making this up, it arrived 10 minutes after the final whistle of the semi-final.
Wow.
And so I just spent a good week just writing some wrongs.
Just battering France on.
Yeah, spattering France over and over again. But yeah, was it the best Rugby Challenge in the modern era? That or Rugby Challenge 2 for me?
Because Rugby Challenge 2 was the same game but more refined.
Yeah, it had number 8 pickups in it, which was the main selling point. Yeah.
And Lions.
Yeah, of course they had the Lions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas... I was really gutted when I put that disc into my Series X and it wasn't backwards compatible. I was like,
oh, man.
Of all the games, surely that would have been first in the queue for backwards compatibility. Surely, but apparently not.
Why aren't they doing a HD remaster of all the Rugby Challenges together?
I don't know. But well, not Rugby Challenge 4.
Never mind Mass
terrible.
Effect. What's that? Who cares?
We've complained a lot about
loads of space games.
They need to refine the 2011 Rugby World Cup game because that one was fine. Like,
yeah,
everything they've released since has been pretty bad, but that one was fine. So if they did that with updated squads and everything, then
we've talked about this on this podcast before. But we still play that very regularly.
Pretty much every time we see each other.
We go back to the 2011 World Cup game.
I'm actually playing it right now.
What you can do?
I'm playing it whilst recording this.
See, yeah. I didn't buy that because I was waiting for General Omi Rugby Challenge and because I'd been burned by Rugby 07, I think it was, which was the last PS2 one, which was fine, but just left.
Everybody just always waxes lyrical about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
Like, I plugged it back in for a thing I was doing for World Rugby where they wanted to talk about rugby video games last year. And again, That is an okay game. It is a weaker version of the 2011 game, but it has teams that aren't the 20 teams from that World Cup in it.
The 2011 one also doesn't have Mark Waito on the front, so
yes, I mean, that's true.
Yeah, I could see. Yeah, maybe that is why. Still, anyway,
they literally went to nobody instead of Mark Waito.
Just puts a rugby ball on the front.
Yeah.
People will buy it.
More people will want it. That was also England's tactics in this World Cup. Just like, we could just put no one on the wing, or we put Mark Waito.
Yeah.
Well, we need an extra defender, don't we?
Defender is a strong word, but sure.
We need just someone to stand there, you know? Look nice. So people can go, hey, is he the guy from 2007? Both for the video game and from the falling over near the corner and complaining about it for 10 years. Right.
Anyway, should we actually talk about the game of rugby, or do we just bin that bit, the bit where we talk about the rugby?
I mean,
it's there, isn't it? Firstly, I would like to say it is a real time and place to have a game started by Black Eyed Peas. I got a feeling
The top 14 final this year.
Yes. Synergy. Yeah.
I will add that every game at this World Cup was kicked off by that song.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Yeah, genuinely, every single game they had that playing. And the, hey, baby. Oh. Ooh.
Yeah, which apparently only just got to New Zealand by 2011.
Yeah, yeah. Those two songs were played for every
single game. I got a feeling by the Black Eyed Peas came out in 2008.
Really?
So it was not a new song at that point.
No.
That was... No, because it was Moves Like Jagger was the thing that was...
Yeah, that was the number one.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah, we looked at that before. That was number one in the UK, was it, I believe, at the time of this World Cup? Yeah.
Yes, because Friends with Benefits was the number one movie at the time.
Oh, of course.
Do you know what's number one in the charts this week for the head of this? Well, on the album front, I can tell you that it is... it's not great. It is the Steps Greatest Hits package.
Okay.
Steps, the ultimate collection. And on the music front, it was, on the single front rather, it was We Found Love by Rihanna featuring Calvin Harris was topping the charts.
I thought that was earlier than that.
Yeah, me too. I'm surprised it was that late. It was 3 weeks at number one.
Right. I thought that was 2009. But shows what I know about Rihanna and Calvin Harris.
Do you think it was the sheer trauma of the Sam Warburton red card that led everyone to go out in bulk and buy Steps for comfort?
Yeah, I think that must be it. It's the only real logical solution. Yeah. I mean, all of the things that were number one in the films that week did sort of, Paranormal Activity number three, the third one, Yawn, was joined by Contagion, and We Need to Talk About Kevin all in the top 10 this week.
Whoa, that's a miserable week. Yeah, that's probably embracing the misery of the nation.
Especially because it knocked Johnny English Returns off top
spot. Wow. Which is, funnily enough, the film me and Robbie watched silently after the...
Yes, the 2019 one. Yeah. That was on ITV after the semi-final. And we sat in silence and didn't say a word whilst it was
on. After the final whistle of the 2019 South Africa-Wales semi-final when South Africa won, we sat through all of Johnny English Reborn and neither of us said a word after the final whistle.
I mean,
until
fair
after
enough.
That finished. Yeah.
I had to... I couldn't watch. I had a work thing on that Sunday morning, which I couldn't, or I had to drive to London. And so I listened to the first half, got there early, and then watched the second half on my phone, sort of in the car park of a race course before a guitar show on my own. Jeez. And so I sort of just sort of watched that chain smoking out of my window. And then we lost. And then I just, and that was about 11 o'clock. And the thing didn't start till sort of half 11, 12. So I just sort of sat there in my car on my own, just watching middle-aged men turn up with guitars and try not to make eye contact with them.
Did you have to do the kind of fake smile thing?
Oh, yeah.
The whole day. Yeah.
Just like, really pretend. I think I wasn't going to smoke that day because I was trying to quit. And then at half time, I was like, I drove to a co-op somewhere in the fucking outskirts of East London and just bought 20 fags and smoked them all by the end of the game. Yeah, I was just so stressed. It was so horrible. They were gone by
50 minutes. It was.
Now that I don't smoke, I don't know how I'm going to deal if Wales ever get to a fucking World Cup semi final again, because genuinely, I don't know how normal people cope.
That's the problem. We don't.
I mean, it's win-win because either we win or we've got the bronze final to look forward to. We've got you in as the specialist on Wales and bronze finals.
I will say this bronze final is a lot better than the 2019 bronze final.
Sure, yeah.
I will just say, from all of that chat, what I take it is you don't remember any of the nominees for the 2011 World Player of the Year.
Oh, no, yeah. Absolutely. So Thierry Dusautoir, Richie McCaw, I'm guessing were both on there.
No, Richie McCaw. No, Jerome Kleiner was on there. Marnoni was on there. Perry Weeper was on there. Wow. Yeah. Perry Weeper then cashed that in for Pizza Hut. Will Genia and David Pocock were in there and then both played in this game.
I mean, not being in there after the World Cup that he had, regardless of the red card. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I think up until that moment, that was probably the best I've seen a Wales player play over the course of like five or six games in my lifetime. I've never seen anyone play better.
Yeah.
Mad shit.
Whereas Dusautoir had kind of done nothing up until then.
Rest of the French team.
We kind of all whisper it, but like Dusautoir he kind of had a good quarterfinal, but that was it.
Dusautoir won, didn't he?
He's not like won a man of the match award that we've dished out.
Not yet. Nothing at all. No. He hasn't got no. But yeah, we won't. We'll get to where I don't know. At this stage, you can't see him possibly winning.
No, of course not.
It's not like he'll be so good in one game.
He's only got one game left to play. maybe the World Cup final. Yeah.
That won't.
How good could he possibly be?
Yeah, exactly. So rugby happens. Mm. So Australia start this game quite well. Do you mind me talking about this game? Australia.
I suppose we've got it, haven't we?
Australia start quite well. There's a point where Quade Cooper nearly sets up a try for James O'Connor because Will Genia just decides to be really good.
Yeah.
And has a few good runs. And then there's often points, right, where Australia completely lose their shape. And then Will Genia just kind of has a light bulb appear above his head and goes, lads, what if I did something good?
Have you ever considered doing rugby?
How about we do something good instead of going backwards, and then he'll just deliver like the world's greatest pass you've ever seen.
So like that Australian backline, I mean, for all of my doing down of Quade, between Barrett Barnes, Quade and Genia, there's some delightful flat passing on the game. It's just like
What I love is that, like, every single time Australia work the ball sort of two passes away from contact, Berrick Barnes just goes, no, we're playing a kicking game today, lads. And every time he would always just pump the ball into the like Welsh backfield, which was pretty much non-existent for the first half at least. And the rest of them would kind of look a bit annoyed at him, like, yeah, you've just, great kick, Berrick, but what about playing flashy rugby?
That was the thing. But the annoying thing.
How about playing flashy rugby in the right areas? You're not used to that, are you?
That would never catch on. The worst thing was they were all good kicks.
Yeah.
So they were always more annoyed really with him. Like, oh, you've done something of value. Thanks, Berrick. You could have given James O'Connor a run into Falasau.
Honestly, Berrick Barnes, a sliding doors kind of what could have been player. Like, he was really good in this game and was always really good whenever he could actually be fit for Australia. But he so rarely was. And then he fucked off to Japan in 2013 and never came back.
Yeah. He was one of those weird players that his reputation was for him not being that good, and Australian fans didn't like him because he kicked and because they had this incredibly flashy backline that was so much fun to watch. And he was not fun. He was functional. He was
really
going to make everything else
work. Yeah. Well, he was the sensible guy in that Reds backline.
It was so necessary.
It was Genia, Cooper, and then there was the sensible 12 outside him who would occasionally go, actually, Quaid, I know you like doing goose steps and ridiculous offloads, but what if I kick the ball down the field and then you can try him up there? And you're like, all right, fine.
There's probably the point this game is most famous for is Quaid Cooper does this really speculative switch kick back inside James O'Connor on first phase. And like, you can kind of see it coming by the angle of James O'Connor's run, but it still looks really fancy. And then Shane Williams regathers it and Tatafu Palotta now just flips him. And I think Shane Williams does like a 720 flip.
He literally does a full pirouette in the air and lands on his sort of neck and back. And the fact that that is not, that was not, that was given as a knock on against him. And it's like, yes, of course he was knocked on. He was literally fucking ragdolled by a number eight with no arms anywhere near him. Even in 2011, that was a pen. In 2019, that would be a fucking... I dread to think what that would be.
I went and I kept watching it, trying to see where the red card these days is, and I couldn't see it. Because he goes around the ankles. Maybe he doesn't use his...
He doesn't use his arms at all.
I think it's, it's a reckless... It's definitely a yellow card. I still think maybe... a ref would give it as a red in modern things because he lands on his... sort of back neck area, and he's technically in the air because he sort of jumps up just before the, like, trying to hack it on. He sort of
runs into him like a bull. Like, he has his hands practically behind his back as he launches into Shane Williams. And don't worry, I get why it wasn't necessary, like why it wasn't a card back in the day, or maybe why it wasn't penalised. But I look at that now and think, like, my God, he's in trouble.
Well, I just think that, like, especially after what had happened the week before, it's like, okay, so that's a red card now, but this ragdolling motherfuckers into the air, like they're some sort of, you know, crash
great
test
hit
dummy.
Nonetheless.
Yeah, do you know, that's just a good hit.
Do you know why it wasn't a red card back then?
Why?
But it because the game's gone soft.
Of course, I forgot about key detail that in between the semi-final and the bronze final, the game had gone hard.
Yes.
People forget
and
about
so
this.
So the game then had to go soft
from
there.
Go soft again,
Because otherwise, what are we supposed to complain about? What are we supposed to complain about? You know, Shane flies through the air like something from the Lego movie. Like him just hurtling and spinning in the air in slightly too animated the fashion.
Yeah.
And that then inextricably caused the beginning of the flaccidization of rugby union right there in that moment.
Like, as he's spinning through the air, a light bulb appeared that he'd stolen from Will Genia.
I'm pretty sure Shane was shouting, "Game's gone soft," as he was flipping through the air.
He was calling for all high tackles to be red cards.
Brett Gosper became unerect in that moment.
His hair dropped out the back of his head.
Exactly.
So
wait a minute. No. There's an implication there that Brett Gosper up until then was always erect.
Always erect. Look at him.
From the opening ceremony all the way up to the bronze final.
Look at him and tell me that that is not a man that walks around with at least a semi. Most of the time.
Do you think that's why he's gone to the NFL now? Because he saw semis there.
Yeah. Well, he can claim it's pads now, can't he?
Yeah.
That's true. That game.
They don't mind
hard
you.
Now.
They don't,
that's
they
why
don't
the game's gone hard.
Pirouetting, folks.
Game's gone hard.
Oh, nice. Lovely.
Nice.
Speaking of how the game has changed, right? There's that moment about 2 minutes 30 seconds where, like, there's another lovely flat pass across the Australian backline, and Gethin Jenkins literally just slaps the ball up in the air.
Yes.
And it's play on. It's not even a knock on. Wales gather the ball, and that would be a penalty and a yellow card. The most million percent of that.
I couldn't shake the feeling that Wayne Barnes had been spending too much time around Steve Walsh this World Cup.
I mean,
And also, like, let's be honest, Wayne Barnes was not happy he was delegated the bronze final, was he?
No.
And so he very much just decided to pop the cork pre-match.
Although, if you do listen to Mr. Phil Kearns, he had this to say about how Wayne Barnes felt about the bronze medal match.
Going on, but I've got to ask yourself a question. How many more big games of rugby does Wayne Barnes get? It's got to... It's been a good game of rugby so far.
Yeah.
The occasion's got to him. How many more games does he get?
The occasion of the bronze final has got to him.
Yeah.
I mean, even my home broadcaster
standards, he's incredibly bored. You know, he's fed up. He doesn't care anymore. He's going to referee it like it's a game of local touch between kids.
I mean, the Wales final try.
Mm.
I mean,
oh, the
Shane is so out, so out, and so in touch, and he's just like, "Fuck you! I'm going to just play on."
Shane was less out when he did that flip 30 feet through the air and left the stadium.
100%. At least half of his body was in touch.
And he doesn't let go of the ball. Like, he's just in touch.
Just in touch. And Bond's like, carry on, fuck it.
There are fans who are more in the field of play than Shane Williams.
Like, his body was literally perpendicular to the touchline, and he was out of it at the waist.
That's it. Like, you, compared to Shane, like, you sitting there giving your running commentary, remembering none of it, was basically playing scrum half. Like, I was on the far wing, and I was sat somewhere in Nottingham watching this.
Calling for the crossfield from Steve.
Yeah. I'm sure you've got this distance in you.
I'm in the Northern Hemisphere, Steve-o.
Yeah.
You
know. Reese Hodge steps up. No worries. No worries. There's like a little nudge.
Yeah. I'm sure if you'd asked Conte Pomi, he would have tried his best. So from that resulting scrum...
That's how far offside he was. He was stood in my front yard.
From that resulting scrum, from the knock-on that we discussed about half an hour ago, Beric Barnes again just decides, you know what's sensible, lads? Scoring tries. And he runs the most basic unders line and just completely bamboozles the Welsh defence as though he's run, like, the world's greatest angle.
And, of course, the home commentary have to bill it up as it is the world's greatest angle from Beric Barnes.
Yeah. And he goes over and scores a try from, you know, 10 metres out or whatever.
It's a proper, we are knackered, we are fed up, this game is silly.
Like, we deserve fourth place.
He literally goes through the middle of Foxy and Jamie Roberts, who are both just like, your man?
Yeah. It's Beric Barnesman. Yeah, you can both tackle him.
Yeah, it's not like Stirling Mortlock's coming through to smash his skull again, Jamie.
Yeah.
There
is something of like, is Foxy just really looking forward to playing Connacht away the next week? And he's just like, it's a business decision for the anti reasons of normal. Like, he wants to play a smaller occasion again. He's fed up of pressure.
When you say your man, typically, you know, that means I'm not going to mark Adam Ashley Cooper, rather than let's both mark Adam Ashley Cooper. Let's both mark the much bigger, more aggressive runner and leave this converted fly half, future rugby league kicker, leave him to just go straight for our defence. And, you know, as I say, Barnes runs a decent line and scores, and Wales deserve to be the fourth ranked team in the World Cup.
Because of that moment. I offer you something, right?
Go on. Mm-hmm.
First off, in particular, Wales are rubbish.
Yeah, they're really, really, really poor.
Their kicking game is so... I mean, obviously... We've discussed the James Hook factor, but
yes.
Him and Phillips are both in receiving and in the execution of kicking. It's so poor.
Yeah.
Like, scarcely believable at international level how aimless the kicking is. It's full on Ben Youngs on a bad day.
Yeah. And I think there's something of the fact that the whole team has spent the week in therapy rather than training. But I still, you know, the amount of passes that are going to floor are landing behind people. And I know standards have improved a lot over the last 10 years. And, you know, skills that particularly forwards are so much better. But man alive, catch the ball, you know, throw it to near someone. Like,
Both teams are pretty guilty of that as well. Yeah. You know, like, Australia are better, but they're still not great.
I know the defence is obviously greatly improved, but like, there are sequences of passing in this game that would look poor at Friday night casual touch level.
Sure. I love that Beric Barnes kind of noticed this and kind of just takes the piss out of Wales a little bit. There's that point where he runs through a gap and then still grubbers the ball to himself just to sort of show off how cleanly he can break the Welsh line and look really fancy. And then I love the fact that when he regathers his kick, he's not drawn anybody in. He's got no one in front of him. Mm. And he still just decides, you know, I'm going to pass this to Quade Cooper because then I will look delightful. I will look like I'm not trying to hog the headline. When really he's just seen a really poor Welsh line in front of him, and he's completely taken the piss out of him by knowing that he can just grubber the ball through them, regather it himself completely effortlessly. And like, Beric Barnes looks so effortlessly, like, basically this entire game, and he completely dominates Wales in all facets of it.
Yeah, oh, completely. And like, you add in on top of the fact that Wales are shit, they're also really boring.
Yeah.
They run, you know, the same sort of crash balls over and over again. Fine, whatever, grand. And then when they get into the 22 for the first time, right, they win a penalty of 5 metre scrum. And instead of going for the scrum again, instead of trying to take the points, they're 7-0 down at this point. They go for goal. It's a third place playoff. Who gives a shit? You know, why are you kicking goals from in front of the post, you know, from just next to the post? Which James Hook goes on to miss one in the second half as well, from just next to the post.
Yes, that's appalling. Like, in front
it's
of the
also,
post.
It's also just a terrible sort of ROI in terms of, like, how long it takes to fucking get there. Because, like, they use a full two... Like, you forget how bad scrums used to be. But, like, they use a full, like, 2.5 minutes in resets to get this penalty.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, lads, you've gone through all this. You might as well just fucking stay down here.
Their first 22 entry results in Lee Halfmann passing the ball to Romain Poit on the touchline. I mean,
this is delightful. I mean,
this is magnificent. Romain Poit holding his depth perfectly in a way Shane Williams couldn't.
Yeah. Shane majorly screws up that line.
And catching the ball in the way Shane couldn't. Oh, yeah. Terrible.
Like again, I mentioned Friday night touch sequences. Yeah. Like, this happens all the time when I'm playing, you know, like, casual touch and so on, where you'll forget you've got, you know, like, someone's mum outside you, and you'll try and, like, draw the last man and give the pass inside, expecting them to run a line off you. Then you realise, oh, no, yeah, I should have thought about who's outside me. You know, it's a woman in her 60s who's taking her 3 kids down instead.
That's a hell of a comparison to Shane Williams.
Yeah, oh, positive. Kate, what a finisher.
Yeah, to be fair.
But yeah, you know, like, there's that. But then you go, no, wait, hold on. That isn't a mother of three who is playing for the first time 2 weeks ago. That's one of the all-time great players who has scored more tries than anyone else in the history of the game in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
He should be able to run onto that pass. But instead, do you know who does run onto that pass? Romain Poit, who is not a referee. He is a winger.
Nor a coach. Yeah. He's a winger.
I tell you what, though, as much as he definitely fucks that up, and he fucks up quite a lot of things, you forget when, and maybe you're slightly desensitized to it because you've been watching this whole tournament, but, like, I was sort of, you know, partly because I was basically watching this game as if for the first time, but when Shane gets the ball, you forget that sort of, like, rising excitement. Like the first time he gets it, which ends up in him getting penalised for double movement, but he, like, gets it in a terrible mess of forwards and just goes, I'm going to step two of them anyway. And it's like, oh yeah, that's why he was special.
One of the great novelties of this World Cup is Shane getting the ball and managing to make that much space that he's sending, like, Dan Lydia and Bradley Davis through gaps, who are, like, so, like, untimely in loads of space. And they look so uncomfortable when they're running lines off him. And it's just like, oh, no, I wasn't running this line intending to make a break. But cheers, Shane.
There's about 3 moments in this game where Shane takes the ball at first receiver, then just holds on to it. Like, he sort of just inches forward, and the defence shits themselves so hard that a gap opens up eventually.
Well, the try, the last Wales try, is, you know, there's no way on God's earth Shane should have carried that ball all the way over to the try line. Like, he had 2 men outside him, and he's just like, fuck it, it's the 80th minute, this could be my last test match, I am going to fucking score here. And somehow, it ends up in a Wales try on the other side.
Yeah.
But, like, that's through absolutely no concern or craft of Shane. That's just Shane being a total fucking dick.
Yeah.
There is that. There are occasional moments of Shane knowing who he
is.
Fuck it,
I'll do it myself.
Game. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. One of my favourite moments of the first half is. It comes
one
from
of the moments I tolerated from the first half.
Sure. It comes from as a result of Wales giving away, like, 6 penalties on the bounce, building something in the Australian 22, and then eventually James O'Connor has a shot at goal. It comes off the post, and it's one of those beautiful moments in rugby that only comes from the ball coming off the post and a penalty, which is seeing Luke Charteris's counter-attacking skills. And when you find second rows, like, in the backfield going, okay, now I'm going to take everyone on, lads. And you go, Digby Wanning, never heard of you, mate, trying to bowl them over. And obviously he made about 3 yards, but I just think it's one of those beauties of the ball coming off the post.
Yeah.
You know what I noticed about Luke Charteris in this game that distracted me for a good 15 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
You noticed his weird scrum cap in the game. The way that he's got the sort of lacing at the back of it. Like most scrum caps have a thing where you can just tie it tight at the back. But I think because his head is basically like a giant milk bottle and that it's much more long than it is wide, like, he's had to pull it so tight that to get the requisite fit, he's got sort of like what I can only describe as a red ribbon ponytail at the back. And it's so, I found it like, I'm sure it's not even made out of red ribbon, but it looks like it's made out of lovely red ribbon, like shiny red ribbon. He basically looks like, and he's done it with a large bow.
Mm.
And so he sort of looks like a horse that's been tarted up for dressage, you know? Like when they have like sort of
straightened
the
bows
thing in their mane. Anyway,
he
yeah,
just
that's
licorice on the back of his head as a snack to keep it going.
No, there is an equine quality to Luke Charteris, I think. But that's
yes.
dramatically increased if you give him a mane.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he was somehow a show giraffe. If they sent giraffes to Escott, Esquot. No, I can't say the word. What's it called?
Esquot.
Where they do the horses. Yes, Esquot. That is, don't Google that. There will be some unsanitary results. I'm not going to explain any
that's
of that because I used to know a producer I was working on something with. Then it turned out he was a massive pervert and he mostly filmed porn, but he kept this all secret. And you can hear his voice sometimes laughing over clips on splatpakaki.com. But
okay,
let's
you
not
said
go
you
any
weren't
more
going to explain.
Why.
I mean,
I haven't
explained,
explained
more
detail.
Than I ever wanted you to. Yeah.
I mean,
anyway,
what
Luke Charteris is a lovely
Luke
horse.
Charteris. Luke Charteris, yes, yeah, my lovely, lovely, lovely horse.
Funny, speaking of that song, there's a point before the Wales Ireland quarter final. I forgot to bring this up on that episode where there's a bunch of Irish fans singing that song as my lovely Rog. So they brought a guitar out to New Zealand with them from Ireland just to sing My Lovely Horse from Father Ted, which is made by Ted and nobody else.
Yes.
And, yeah, sung My Lovely Rog over the top of that. And there
kicking
are more
down
lyrics
the field.
To that. Something like that, yeah.
Mm. Now, oh, speaking of songs, yes.
I was going to say, we can't talk about Wales at this World Cup and musical contributions without talking about the sort of the phenomenon that was Sam, our captain.
Yes.
Yeah. I remembered this out of, like, I'd forgotten about it for a decade. But do you remember how much of a sort of bizarre, like, it just swept the nation? I think if they'd released it, if they'd stuck that on iTunes, it would have got to number one.
Well, like happened with the Blims, the following Six Nations, where they had that inexplicable huge hit about Wales winning the Grand Slam and versus that reference Justin Timberlake but didn't name drop him. Yeah, but it was because it sort of just came out of nowhere.
Well, it was created by a Welsh expat called Mark Berridge, who apparently wrote it on the plane over from Sydney to Auckland for the World Cup. Mm. And then it was one of those early days of sort of social media going viral things. People took videos of him singing it on the mic in various pubs and it just went mental. You know, and you know, Wales Online published the lyrics in full ahead of the the semi-final, so that like people could sing it in pubs and at the stadium,
including the verse where
they took out the Wayne Barnes being a cock one. To be honest with you, I'm glad they took out the last two verses because, I mean, after the Andy Powell verse, the wheels really come off from a sort of meter perspective. They add a whole he inserts an entire extra line into the verse, the last two verses, which just makes, and you can tell because every time he sings it, people get confused and they stop singing along. And it's like, that's a sign that you fucked the song up, mate.
Yeah.
It's like, there's two rhyming couplets in each of these and you've just decided to not rhyme one line and then stick another rhyming couplet in. That doesn't work, mate. That's not how music works. This isn't jazz.
I've just looked it up, and Wales Online have, as you say, they've removed the Wayne Barnes verse, and they've also changed the Mike Phillips verse, which for anyone that isn't familiar with this, for anyone that doesn't remember this, it was to the tune of Sloop John B.
I've got it here.
Beach Boys.
I've got it queued up, lads.
I've
got the studio version, which is recorded with ukulele accompaniment. So,
Warren Gatland's army and me. We're here to take the cup all the way home.
All the way home.
The best part of this was the sort of singing, the call and response aspect.
With Sam, the captain, we'll take the cup home.
The Cardiff.
This is all in my head. I remember every word of it.
I remember all of these words.
Call for the captain ashore, take the cup home.
We'll take the cup home.
the second verse here is a real like window into the Welsh psyche. Because, yes, you know, we haven't even talked about the Welsh players, and we're right into Gavin Bill Martin. He always bitches and moans like a true
punk. Like a true punk. He's losing his head. Predictable run.
The lady doc protests too much.
He's going well at this point. He's going really well.
Yeah. Solid. Solid. Could have put Danny Care instead of We Don't Care.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, injury to Danny Care.
Yeah. I would have liked to have had a Manny to a Likey Fairy reference in there, but it might have been before then, you know?
But they also, you know, like, they clearly do care, because they're first up, Martin Johnson's a bitter man.
Yeah, the first two verses are complaining about how much it costs for a pint in New Zealand and then taking the piss out of England and Martin Johnson. It's like the Welsh psyche and a bit of Andy Powell. He's a lad, he drives buggies in his spare time. He's a legend. He once gave me a lift down the M4.
Down the M4. But he went the wrong way. Classic Andy.
I forgot that Andy Powell had a Wales career after the Boggy incident.
Yeah.
He was at this World Cup, he comes on and runs straight and hard.
Throws like two offloads, which is a novel thing for this Wales team.
At one point, Kearnsy's like, I think he's going to run straight and hard, yeah?
Yeah. So how does he know that was going to happen?
I think this is the moment where the wheels come off. Is this the Mike Phillips verse?
This is Jamie Roberts.
I feel like,
next.
Oh yeah.
Oh, fuck it, it's Jamie Roberts.
And this is Wayne Barnes verse. Jamie Roberts. A clever
mind. He's a doctor. He'll be a doctor in 2 years time. So he's not a doctor.
No. That's funny. That's a joke. I'll go with that.
I also think it's funny that he says he'll be a doctor in 2 years time, when in reality Jamie Roberts wasn't a doctor for that. Is he even a doctor yet?
Yeah, he's graduated, but he's not doing it because it's a bit hard, isn't it? Being a doctor.
Don't fucking blame him.
He's still a full-time professional rugby player. Yes.
And he can't be a bit of doctoring on the side, honestly.
I enjoy that he always gets the ball over game lines. They can't tackle him, which are in direct like contradiction.
Yeah.
If you can get the ball over game lines.
In order for there to be a game line, you have to be tackled. Yeah.
Look, we didn't say it was entirely analytically sound.
Yes.
It is where the words come off. There we go. He's a model in his spare time. Love this part. Lovely. He always pulls the best birds when he's on top. Yes, nothing to a rhyme that begins with this. Yeah. He's not jealous of me.
Cause he is shagged. Where the fuck did this one come from? With
Sam, my captain. He's thrown another line into that verse.
I mean, I will say it's more Ryan Wilson than Brian Wilson.
I mean, I think. Well, I've never heard Ryan Wilson sing. Maybe he's got a lovely voice. But I'm sure he's not a sort of effervescent pop genius. So,
What if he was all this time? And he just never had the brothers to bring it out of him.
Yeah, this one wasn't Prince of Wales Online.
Yeah.
But topical, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. But he said no. He can't do his job. He's no longer barrister, he's terrible at it.
Just throw a non-rhyming fucking line into the middle of this. Can't handle it. Anyway. Enough of that.
That's pretty... The first I heard of it was on Scrum 5. And they asked Sam Warburton about it. And he said that Ken Owens had shown him and the rest of the team. That they'd found... Ken had found it on YouTube.
Wow. Okay.
And had shown everyone else.
You've got to love Ken, haven't you, for that?
Why was there not supposed about Ken? I know he was uncapped, but...
Do you think Ken... was really excited to be in New Zealand because it was the first time he'd seen the internet.
Yeah.
I think that Mike Phillips verse is like a fire desire rhyme away from being the worst verse I've ever heard in anything.
It's pretty bad. That wasn't all though, because during the World Cup, reporters...
So just quickly,
on
the Mike Phillips bit,
yes.
Wales Online did, when printing the lyrics, change it from he's shagged Duffy to he's been with Duffy.
I mean, that's
no
ruined
scans.
Absolutely ruined the meter of it even more than it was already ruined. That's just like, you've seen a car, you've driven past a car crash And you've gone, I'm just going to reverse into this.
Yeah, it's less Ryan Wilson and more Josh Strauss. they've moved so far away from Brian Wilson now that they're a big, angry South African Scottish man in the Tartan
Scrum. Yeah, it's basically the equivalent of that plot amount tackle on Shane, but in musical yes. form. Everything's flying off in strange directions. And we don't know what it is, but we know we don't like it. But yeah, during that World Cup, reporters from Sky Sports show Sports Cafe, which appears to be New Zealand's version of Soccer AM, but with rugby, attempted to get their own Wales song going. Do you remember this?
Oh, no.
Which
I don't
was
remember this.
To the tune of the Out Here Brothers' famously dirty 1995 banger, Boom, Boom, Boom. And somehow they even got Wales players to get involved.
I remember this. Everybody, let me hear you say Wales. Oh, Wales. Yes.
Let me hear you say Wales.
That's Alan Wynne Jones there.
No! I remember this.
Whale. What's his favourite whale?
Favourite whale. Blue whale.
Blue whale.
Favourite whale. The humpback. It's a pretty, pretty impressive creature, I guess. Killer whale.
Oh, really, was it?
Free Willy, the film. Yeah.
Is that Foxy?
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Let me hear
Wales.
Now.
Wales. Blue
Royal. Can you imagine him doing that, man?
No.
Figures in the ocean.
Jamie Roberts. Really, really. I think they basically ambushed them and asked them what their favourite whale is. And they all look.
The good thing
really
about whales
confused.
Is they like to move it.
I'm genuinely shocked they managed to book anybody higher up the pecking order than Ryan Bevington and Craig Mitchell for that. Let alone Alan Wynne Jones.
They got Alan Wynne, Foxy, Jamie Roberts, and Luke Charteris.
Hmm.
The entire engine room and midfield.
That's pretty high profile.
I don't know. And this is a man in a silly curly wig. It's just...
I forgot about that completely.
Me too. Hmm. But fucking hell. It was a weird World Cup in that way.
Yeah.
But
as you say,
all the better for it.
The start of social media and things could go viral and so on. But it was at that weird point in which if a big company tried to make something go viral, it might actually do it.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, it was when the power of brands, because I remember like there were some attempts to do this before the 2015 Rugby World Cup where big brands were like, we're going to get some viral, funny videos. And they paid certain people who had been kind of quite popular in the viral rugby video scene.
Yeah.
Don't drop the egg. a lot of money to make some crushingly unfunny videos that did about 200 views. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we discussed on this pod before Nottingham Rugby trying to get number one at Christmas in 2011, and that got maybe 1,000 views.
I'll say this, right? World Rugby hiring someone who'd had quite a lot of hits on YouTube to make content for them at a World Cup.
Shit idea.
Terrible idea. Terrible idea. You should never have done it. You should never have got any of those twats on.
They spent so long thinking whether they could do it. They didn't really spend any time thinking if they could, whether they should.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is that was on musical hits of 2011?
I think it probably
for the time
is.
Being?
Yeah, I mean,
I did send you.
Unless you want to talk about Steps again,
I did send you early today, Josh, the All Black Everything.
Oh, genuinely, of course,
just a remarkable archive, yeah. Like just as an artifact of, you know, freeze it in time, 2011. There's so much, and they were still using the All Black Everything as a sort of like. As an All Blacks thing.
Like, as a tagline.
For anybody who hasn't heard it that's listening, in the New Zealand-Japan episode, we do a proper analysis of that and the name-dropping of Isaiah Toeyava.
We actually are joined by
we interview P-Money.
We definitely interview the real P-Money.
That was definitely him.
Who came on. And he explains his creative process what you could describe. One other thing about the end of this half, right? End of the first half.
Yeah.
We get to see a lesser spotted animal in its natural habitat, which is now suddenly extinct, which is the fox grubber.
I miss those.
Do you remember when Jonathan Davis used to randomly grub away possession and it always went into, it was always slightly on, but the kick always went into touch and was kind of pointless and worthless?
Sure.
I mean, you could see that all the time.
You could see Shane Williams in a lot of space back there. Yeah. You could see that it was possible, but the probability ratio of that staying in field and sitting it perfectly for him, probably pretty low.
And also, he continued to do it when Wales's two wingers were George North and Alex Cuthbert, both of whom are very quick when they get up to top speed, but are not exactly shooting through a tiny... You know, they're not Shane Williams.
Yeah.
No. Pace-wise. Yeah.
The majority of my notes on the remainder of the first half is just how shit James Hook is. I've got he drops a ball, gives a hospital pass, he kicks something out on the full, he shapes the most telegraphed backline attack that you'll ever see and gets Jamie Roberts stripped. So, and then briefly, Stephen Jones comes on and Wales look like a rugby team, but less of that as Stephen Jones ends up going off again.
It's Gatland's absolute refusal to accept that Stephen Jones was still a good idea at this point. Blind spot, I think.
He really wants
James Hook to work, and it just...
It doesn't. It really doesn't. I'm just glad he abandoned it very soon after this and only had moments of weakness for the next few years. I've got one note that just says, loving by QC, Quay Cooper, arrow to offside Wales, and then the next arrow to murder. And I don't know what that means.
No, I don't know what that means. I don't think I want to.
Quade Cooper, offside Wales, murder.
Okay.
If anyone has any answers to what that may mean, please send them to PO Box 686.
at Israel Folau.
Please send them to at Israel Folau on Twitter. Please send all of your theories and also any gay porn you happen to have on you at that time.
Yes.
Should we move on to the second half?
When Quade Cooper comes back out, sits on the bench and starts tweeting.
Do you know who else comes out? Do you know who else comes out? Nathan Sharp, who does his leg in and is told he should come off. He goes, this is my last game for the Wallabies. Minus 16. This is my last game for the Wallabies.
It's my 17th to last game for the Wallabies.
He says, I'm going to play on until I physically can't. And the coaches, for some reason, go, okay, fair enough. The doctor says, basically, when you get to halftime, the adrenaline will no longer push you through. The moment you cool down, your body will break and you won't be able to continue. So he goes, cool, I'll play till halftime, at which point I'll be physically broken and won't be able to walk again. But it'll be worth it because I played an extra 15 minutes of the Wallabies. And then he comes out for the second half. I don't know what happened in between. I don't know if he just jogged on the spot. He was like Aaron Wainwright in 2019, just doing a few laps on the, you know, on the exercise bike in between. But
Digby Wally around the changing room.
It just really like adds to the whole end of term vibe to this game, doesn't it?
Yes.
It's like the teacher's lost control. The kids are basically running the show, but fuck it.
The kid's a massive bald man called Nathan.
I mean, the most notable thing to start the half is James Hook missing between the posts.
Yeah.
I can remember lining that kick up and thinking, oh my God, he's about to miss that.
Just on injuries in the first half. George North has to go off for blood. And when the camera cuts to him, it looks like the end of Carrie. Like he's properly covered in blood all over his head. Like I don't know if I've ever seen a rugby player bleeding more than he is right there. It's incredible. It's incredible. And then in the second half, he takes a hard tackle, gets up and carries the ball again a few minutes later, and the blood is pouring all over his face again. But it's the last play, so they don't, you know, they just carry on.
Yeah.
Like, clearly, whatever bandage or whatever strapping up he'd had comes off, and he's just bleeding relentlessly again.
That's Shane off the pitch.
Yeah.
It's almost like, rugby's got a lot more sensible in the last 10 years regards to how it allows players to continue to play rugby. Yeah. Because that, like, no matter what George was telling anyone, that cut was not closed and was clearly just still bleeding constantly. Yeah. And every time there was a break in play, somebody was coming on and changing that bandage. Because when they weren't, like you said, it looks like the end of Carry. It looks like, you know, it looks like Platoon. You know, it's just bad stuff. And, you know, he's 18 years old at this point. Just maybe he'll have plenty more.
He could have been at the prom in Carry. That's how young he was. They
young.
Called him up.
Doesn't Quade everyone Cooper look is. Young?
Yeah.
In this game?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Like, Dan Lydiate looks young. I'd forgotten what Dan Lydiate looked like when he was young, because he looked so sort of weathered for about 10 years, it seems. I think he became old in 2012. But at this point, he still just looks remarkably fresh-faced. John Davis has got highlights.
Yes.
Which just...
Jamie Roberts and Alan Wynne-Jones both have hair.
Yeah, Alan Wynne's been going through the soul patch period.
I was amazed by Adam Ashley Cooper, how fresh-faced he looks. And like, he's not got the full beard by this point, and he's not got the slicked back hair quite.
He's not mainly grey.
James O'Connor, man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. James O'Connor looks like an actual baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Justin Bieber thing all over.
Yeah.
You mentioned Dan Lydiate, and I want to throw up a brief moment of Rod Kafer being an idiot.
Oh, I hate
it. Oh, yes, I know what's coming.
Yeah.
Over. His tournament is over. Lucky there's an L in front of Lydiate's name. Thank you, Philip.
Sorry, it's Phil Kearns, not Rod Kafer. I don't know if you caught that. He just says, in a moment's silence, it's lucky there's an L in front of Lydiate's name. And then there's a moment's silence, and then someone says, thank you, Philip.
That says to me is that he's never heard of Dan Lydiate before this game.
No, exactly.
I also like to think that Dan Lydiate heard about this and remembered 2 years later when Lids was chop tackling Australia to death on the Lions tour. Just looked up into the commentary booth. I was like,
you're next. Is it?
Yeah. The disrespect. Future Six Nations player of the tournament, Dan Lydiate.
There's another moment that Phil Kearns has.
He has a lot of... But even by home broadcast standards, this comms team are unbelievably biased.
Yeah,
amazing. At one point, Kearns shouts, give it to Digby.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like
a few points,
man,
to be honest.
Even by Jiffy standards, this is bad.
Yeah. And like, they reach a point where they don't care about the outcome of the game. They want Digby Ioane to have a run. And every time the Wallabies get possession, they're just going like, go on, pass it to Digby, lads. You know you want to. And there's a point where Berwick Barnes does this brilliant kick into the Welsh 22. And they're going like, I wish he gave it to Digby Ioane.
It's remarkable. But
there is
again,
this, like,
end of term.
They desperately fancy Digby Ioane. And they're trying not to express it.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Digby Ioane, incredibly handsome man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't blame them at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and especially after that dancing, man. Like,
of course.
Anyone would. There's a moment where they're talking about chip kicks. Mm-hmm. And one of them says, basically, just like constantly in the Northern Hemisphere, all they do is chip kick, just loads of chip kicks. And Phil Kearns says, so they do more chip kicks than they do up here. And they go, yeah. And he says, thank God I don't have to commentate on that.
Oh, my God.
As though, A, chip kicks are the worst thing in rugby.
It's
and weird. B, feelings mutual, Phil.
It's because James O'Connor keeps doing bad chip kicks.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if all you're seeing is bad chips over the top of the defence, then I can understand why. But occasionally, they're quite good. They're not always horrendously overhit directly into Lee Halfpenny's hands. Sometimes they actually cause a problem for the defence.
I mean,
today is not that day. But
I think that's a perfect segue onto Wales's first try.
I don't think that the Northern Hemisphere was... I know it was the period of rush defence you could undo like that, but the Northern Hemisphere wasn't completely caught up in chips.
No.
I don't know if he just heard about fish and chips as a meal and assumed that must be... He's mixing that up. They all love chips over there.
They call them chips up there, mate. Yeah. Really? Chips. Yeah.
Crisp kicks doesn't have quite the same ring to it, does it? You know,
The French call them frites.
Freedom kicks, as they call them in the US now.
Lovely.
So the Wales try.
Yeah. So Mike Phillips crabs across field a little bit, puts in this delicious grubber kick for James Hook to chase. And then James Hook does his best thing of the tournament, and he decides, you know what people don't do enough of in rugby? If you throw the ball like further in the direction of the opposition goal line, surely that would gain a territorial advantage for you. Why don't people just pass it closer towards the try line a bit more? And so he throws a pass that goes about 20 metres forward.
Miles
for Shane to chip it on. And then, to be fair, hell of a finish by Shane. Chips it around Digby Ioane on sort of the half volley and scores in the corner.
Can I give
it's
you
a classic Shane try.
Yeah.
Yeah. It absolutely was not intended to work out
no,
like that.
No. Down to the like the, his teammate's incompetence and Shane's going, fine, I'll turn this into a try. Why don't I?
Can I give you some distressing news?
Go on.
The Australian commentators make an alarmingly similar point to you. And I've got loads of clips recorded that turned out in the second half, but...
Off there. One of the game to allow to throw the ball forward. Rugby's not one of them. Wayne Bard, serial offender in terms of not ruling on balls like that. That's ridiculous. The touchdown is there as well.
They call him a disgrace at some point, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Oh, really hate Wayne. They hate Wayne Barnes even more than the guy who wrote that song did.
They really hate Wayne Barnes because he allowed a consolation try in the bronze final on something which, yeah. you know, it was very, very, very definitely a forward pass.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, he wasn't at the greatest angle to see it.
No, and you couldn't call that back to the TMO. You could only call it at the time. The TMO could only comment on the finish, on the act of scoring.
It was a consolation try in the bronze final, which Australia won.
Comfortably.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely much more comfortable than the scoreboard made it look.
For sure.
I mean, okay, so this was their commentary on the try itself as it was happening in front of them. Right, and I'll chip in with the moment the try is... Actually, no, I'll see if you can figure out the moment the try is scored. Proper like oh no, free men in the pub vibes.
Yeah,
like they don't commentate. They have a moment. One of them says, "Yo, Wayne Barnes, nothing's forward," because they haven't watched it referee since the last World Cup.
Yeah,
and then they crack on.
And like what I love is that they completely gloss over the incredible piece of skill from Shane Williams to like fly hack this forward, and then just basically sidestep Digby Ioane without even holding the ball. Like don't get me wrong. Definitely a forward pass.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Is by miles, and it probably should. You know, it shouldn't. Well, definitely shouldn't have been a try. You know, if you referee it correctly. But all things considered, fair play, Shane Williams.
Yes, I mean it's a phenomenal bit of skill by Phillips, then Hook, then Williams.
Yeah,
all three of them do very, very well. And yes, there's a forward pass in the middle of it.
Sure,
but come on, mate. Like, if you're not enjoying that, what's the point in rug? I know it's a forward pass, but
yeah.
It's such pure and great and off-the-cuff rugby.
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue, is that, like, I wouldn't mind them being one-sided if it felt like they were at least sort of enjoying some of the spectacle as well. But there's a genuine sort of miserableness about everything. You know? Like, fucking hell. Like, just what are you doing commentating on this game if you hate this so much?
Yeah. This guy is a joke, Wayne Barnes, they say.
Yeah, my final clip of them I recorded comes just over 5 minutes after the try, okay? And they're still annoyed about it.
I love the way that they try and go like, oh, Kiwis, like, aren't we so hard done by Wayne Barnes in World Cups? Like, we've just considered trying the bronze final, lads. Like, oh my God, like, how do you do, fellow people who've had their World Cups ruined by some Englishman?
Oh no, we'll still win this game at a canter.
Yeah.
Oh no. We know exactly how you feel, poor New Zealanders who got robbed in the quarterfinal. Yeah.
They were so upset about it. They were so really angry about it for so long. Even after the final whistle, they were bringing it up over and over again.
I love that. They couldn't even be happy. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, before the game, they seemed genuinely happy for Wales to be in the bronze.
Yeah, final. Yeah.
Like, but afterwards, they couldn't even rejoice in, like, oh, fair play. What a finish by Shane Williams. I mean, yeah. It didn't count for anything. Because, you know, it's happened before where us three all being Welsh fans in this podcast recording room, the opposition has scored something at the time you called, oh no, that should never be allowed. And afterwards you've gone, oh, fair play, that was good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. If
you enjoy the sport of rugby union, like, you can't help but appreciate outrageous skill.
Sure.
Even when it's, you know, against your own team, or even if there's some, you know, but they're not in this commentary booth. Jesus, no.
Yeah.
It's all angry all the time. Imagine how angry those guys must have been by the time Australia reached their sort of nadir of last couple of years.
Yeah.
Really angry because one of them tried to take over the fucking ARU, I guess. So, yeah, really fucking angry. So.
I'm surprised he didn't try and play fly half for them as well while he was there.
Drop himself into the team. There's another point where they're talking about Scott Higginbotham and one of them says, I was just talking to their parents, Peter and I've forgotten their mum's name.
Oh dear!
It's just classic constant, everyday sexism. Wherever you look, yeah, it's just vintage commentary.
The last point I have about the commentary is that at the end, when Shane Williams does that really nice flick pass, Phil Kearns says, "Oh, I thought it might have been Shane Williams, but turns out it was the number 11." And then he looks down on his team sheet and realizes that number 11 is Shane Williams.
You've been watching him for 70 minutes, mate. Yeah.
He also says that they had an injury to Ryan Priestland, who'd been playing very well. At which point, another one of them replies, "Reese," and he says, "Yes, lots of good young players." Clearly thinking Reese is a different Welsh player.
Incredible.
Matthew Reese, the young player, maybe.
Yeah.
But still, it's
Tom Reese.
There was so
Richie Reese.
England's answer at open side still.
Yeah, still. I don't have any. Call him in. Yeah. Call him in. Tom Coe's going to be playing for the Lions in every game ever. So why not put him in?
So is Jack Willis.
Yeah.
Jack Willis is going to be playing for the World 15. Yeah. Jack Willis with one knee is still better than all the players in the world if they had six knees. Like, if Richie McCaw had 15 knees, he still wouldn't be as good as Jack Willis with one knee.
I mean, to be fair, I think that's probably true.
I mean, yeah, I think probably having 15 knees would be a real, you know, like, serious disability.
Yeah. One player who doesn't know anything about having one knee,
who?
Being on one knee, is Henry Slade.
That's damn right. Because he only kneels for the Queen and God, probably.
And even then, he didn't kneel before Alan Wynne-Jones. Yeah. So
James O'Connor gets a couple of penalties.
Yeah. Australia, well taken. You know, close the game out a bit. Barnes.
Australia
really
kind of cruises into the lead. Yeah. Barrett Barnes plays a big part in actually getting into the half.
One of those really steady wins where
it's the sort of thing that Australia don't do anymore.
Yeah.
And they used to do, you know, they did to Wales 11 times in a row or whatever it was, which is that they let Wales hang around until about 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they go, let's finish this off, shall we, lads? And instant set piece pressure comes on and penalties happen. And then eventually they finally get the try that wins it. And it's like, this has all been coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so after suffering 50 minutes of James Hook doing what I guess was an attempt at game management, there's a great point where Shane just decides, I'm sick of this, lads. Like, I'm gonna manage the game. Look, hey, I'm the game manager.
Oh no. Oh no.
And to be fair, I think he does a good job of it, on the whole. You know, he brings in the forwards quite well. And he brings in the forwards quite well. And then Stephen Jones also comes on and actually helps him out a little bit. And those two actually do a very good job and they get into the Australian half. There's a point where they briefly get turned over. Ben Alexander tries to clear the ball and gets charged down by Jamie Roberts, who nearly goes the distance. But we'll gloss over that.
We'll go past that.
Yeah, and then Wales go about 20 more phases and then Shane Williams attempts a drop goal.
And it does not go well.
It's not great. It's really not great.
I don't think it's the worst option in the world, but it's far from Shane's best kick.
Yes.
I mean, it's the worst option in the world if you're somebody that can do drop goals. If you're Shane Williams, you should probably just pass it to someone who is.
Yeah. And Shane is, I suppose, a recognised drop kicker. You know, he scored drop goals for the Ospreys before and stuff.
Leicester,
there was a vibe of like, oh well, I've not got a drop goal yet for Wales, and I'm retiring soon.
I think there's a big bit of that in there.
Yeah,
there's, you know, in wanting to go through the score sheet.
Yeah, like Martin Williams retired with points next to his name, not tries, because of his drop goal against Tonga in 2003. And I think Shane had a little bit of envy about that.
Mm. Yeah, and it's just symptomatic of the sort of malaise that is. You know, Wales are better in this second half.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They are extremely wayward.
Yeah.
Whenever they get anywhere near a sort of point scoring opportunity. The set piece is a mess. The lineout's a mess. Paul James is having another rough afternoon on the tight end side, and you can't blame him.
No.
Also, is Adam Jones on the bench, or did they get the team sheet?
No, he's injured.
Yeah, but they list him amongst the subs on the team sheet at the start of the game, and I think it's because they didn't have anyone else.
Is that not Alan Wynne Jones?
Yeah,
is he listed as AJ?
Maybe.
Yeah, because at this point you only had one prop on the bench.
Oh, of course.
So Ryan Bevington had to cover both sides.
Oh, yeah, Ryan was covering both sides. And he does come on for Paul James and things get absolutely no better as well.
Geffen moves the tight head, which is one of the things we always talked about as a possibility, but it never happened until here.
Yeah. Things get absolutely no better.
Do you know who I think would be most annoyed about that Shane drop goal?
Who?
Geffen Jenkins, because he's the one that passed to him, right? And if they were going to go for a drop goal, he could have done it himself and he would have nailed it.
Absolutely should have fucking taken it.
Yeah.
We all saw his kick in the penalty shootout in 2007. He's fine.
I mean, Bradley Davis recognised fly half, you know, he could have taken it.
So many kicking options, man.
Ryan Jones was the goalkeeper in school.
In that last 20 minutes, there were so many players popping up in places where they shouldn't have. And there was far too much Bradley Davis at first receiver in this game.
Geffen Jenkins basically invents the modern forward. Like him popping up. There's a few times he tries to throw those behind the back pocket passes to someone in the boot. And there's no one there because he's trying to play rugby from 10 years in the future and no one's lingering at his back. And like he plays as an edge forward on a few phases. It's fascinating stuff to watch Geffen Jenkins just invent the future of rugby in one go.
Such a big part of that is how lazy Geffen really is.
Oh,
When he's knackered and he goes, I'm playing an edge forward. But really, he's just hanging out on the wing because he can't be asked to get into the centre of the field. But still.
It's like when you read stories about Razzie Erasmus' playing career and like he was the one going and doing analysis and the coaches were telling him to cool off, you know. And like Geffen is accidentally like that, but without the work ethic.
Sure. So Barry Bonds, slots a drop goal, like really easily. And you think, oh shit, lads, they've got that in the locker.
Yeah, yet another reason why Barry Bonds should have more than the sort of whatever it was, the 30-odd caps that he's got for Australia.
Yeah. Mm. That was improperly wanted to be like the icing on the cake sort of thing. It's just like, I've now done everything in this game because it just seems a bit too easy. And it just felt like he was like setting personal targets for himself at that point, like a pro mode.
Why didn't they give him the kicking so that he could have gone through the score sheet? Their penalties between the posts, they had conversions, very gettable. He could have got a full house.
He should have.
And what were they doing? What were they playing at?
Yeah, instead that bloody winger who can't even score any tries.
Ridiculous.
Looks like Justin Bieber kicking at goal. Disgraceful.
Speaking of tries, Australia score another one. And what a try.
Yeah. I mean, it comes off the back of Australia nearly scoring one of the best tries of the World Cup.
Yeah.
And going the length of the field. I don't remember this at all. And feeding the ball back. And Anthony Faenga did something incompetent. He drew in a man and passed to Luke Burgess, who didn't drop the ball.
I went back and watched this a few times because I wondered if he had. And so he has a straight line in front of him, right? He could just keep running. And instead, he slows down, starts trying to step halfpenny long before halfpenny's there. If he just ran a straight line, he could have potentially offloaded. He would have been grand. Instead, he doesn't do that. He waits until the Welsh defence are all around. And it'd be fine if only Halfpenny was coming across, but there's also George North and someone else who they managed to knock the ball out of Ashley Cooper's
hands.
George North
does an incredible job. Ashley Cooper just
one of the best things finishing
in every other fucking timeline. That's a try.
Yeah.
And George North just goes, "No, I'm just going to fucking smash you right on the try line and knock the ball loose because I'm George North and I'm massive and nobody's realised this yet."
Additionally, not sure whether or not this is relevant, but my notes on that try start with just Andy Powell is shit. So I can't remember what he did, but I think he did a few things that were very, very bad in this game.
So whilst I was watching this try, I got a message from my friend saying she was going to watch School of Rock for the first time tonight, and I was far more interested in that. And I was then just looking at the try and didn't register it as a score because I was too excited for the thought of someone watching School of Rock for the first time.
I think this try would have been so much more interesting if it wasn't scored by Ben McCalman.
Or if scored by Jack Black.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah. that would have made it a
for
lot
a variety more of reasons. That would have been really at this stage in the game. It would have been really interesting.
Look, I had just as much reason over this World Cup to believe that Jack Black was in the Australia squad as Ben McAlmon. You know, they've done just as much in their respective performances.
For their country. As much to annihilate Ireland's breakdown threat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's exactly the same sort of impact was being made. In fact, I think a greater impact was being made by Jack Black because the sheer inspiration of being able to think about School of Rock after having a tough game, you could then just go, wow, everything is okay. School of Rock exists.
Yeah, precisely. But no, I guess Ant Finger's brother, Saya Fayanga, makes a pretty dominant carry. And then the Welsh defence just decides, you know what, lads, the World Cup, so it's inevitable. We're coming fourth place and don't fold around. And he pops a fairly nice ball off the floor to Ben McCammon, who goes over untouched.
It's a bored, tired team being bored and tired.
Yeah.
And you know it's what? Like, Australia did deserve to get more than two tries in this game.
Yeah, they did.
Like, it's a shame that's the one they finished, because they had a few good opportunities and that one was sort of the most boring looking of the lot of them. But they did deserve to get a few more tries, so fair play to them.
Yeah, this was comfortably, you know, an Australian performance that deserved to win handily. And the fact that Wales, you know, only lost by 3 points is just more to do with effort on everyone's part, really.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, Australia took the gas off once they sort of got that sort of 10-point lead and allowed Wales back into it. And Wales, you know, Wales scored their try to make it look respectable with 80 minutes plus on the clock.
I think that's one of the tries of the tournament, to be honest. Like, I think that's a phenomenal
31
try.
Phases.
31 and, phases from
and
70
it doesn't
meters.
Matter that the 27th was in touch.
Sure. And I love that it's like the subs having a chuck about. Like, Lloyd Williams and Lloyd Burns are both on at this point. And like, this is like a 21-year-old Lloyd Williams or something who is just, at that point.
A fresh face, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, he's back when being a replacement scrum half was as simple as Mike Phillips is on, so if I play a little bit faster than him, I'll look like I've made a good impact. And that's what his job was at this World Cup. And he did a really good job at it.
Yeah, he's all energy and getting the ball away quick, and it instantly makes Australia go, ooh. Because they've just been used to Mike Phillips sort of crabbing away.
Playing number 20 for Wales in this World Cup is a mindset.
Hence why Tavis Noyle could do it.
Yeah, right?
My favourite thing about this try as well is that it is fantastic, like 15 phases, but there are 15 phases of Wales getting absolutely nowhere in the half. And then all of a sudden, it's like the Monty Python sketch with the footballers' philosophy team.
Yeah.
Where they kind of have like a eureka moment and they start making 20 yards on every carry.
They start giving it to Shane. There's that point where Shane does like the double dummy scissors and then puts Halfpenny in about, like half the pitch worth of space. And there's another point, I think he sends like Ryan Bevington or someone through a gap at another point. And then, you know, he goes over the white line himself and into touch. And he runs so far. Shane has a few really, really nice touches in this try. I suppose the flick onto Bradley Davis is the best of a lot.
We were all just making the most of him, weren't we?
Yeah. You know?
It was like Munster's last attack the other week, where CJ Stander was carrying every single ball.
Yeah, he was somehow at every ruck.
Yeah, just wanting to make the most of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I also love, so it's Lee Halfpenny finishes the try in the end, but I love Bradley Davis's touch at the end where Shane Williams bats the ball onto him and Bradley is in loads and loads of space, and he maybe could have scored. Bear in mind, Bradley Davis never scored a try for Wales in his career to this day, but he kind of realises that if Adam Ashley Cooper comes across and catches him at this point, he's never going to hear the end of it. And so he just really slowly delivers the ball to Lee Halfpenny, thinking, oh mate, like, if you don't finish this, this is on you at this point. And Halfpenny thankfully does manage to skate into the corner and run it in under the posts.
That's his career as a schoolboy fly half coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a nice touch by Bradley Davis to give that to Halfpenny.
You can see the sort of pain in his eyes as he's giving it, though, because it's just, he knows, you know, he's got 5 meters to cover, but you're Bradley Davis, and the defense is there, and he, you can see him going, well, I might be able to just smash my way over, but if I don't, I'm gonna look a right prick and waste 32 phases of work.
On one hand, if I dummy and go past Adam Ashley Cooper and dive in under the posts, then I will never stop talking about it. But if I get tackled and held up, then I'll never stop hearing about it. And I think he has enough time to figure out the risk and reward
at that
strategy.
Point, though, you're thinking, well, the worst that happens, it could be 33 phases.
Yeah.
It's very true. Like, yeah. At that point, why not go for it? If Shane can be the world's most selfish man at this point in yes. the game, then fuck it.
The thing is, though, so obviously, Harpenny goes over and Wales lose the game 21-18. Australia would rather win the game, deservedly, 21-18, and that's the final score. But they give the kick at goal to Stephen Jones, and it's like, why don't you just give it to Bradley Davis or Dan Lady or someone? Like, it's the last kick of your World Cup. You might as well just even piss
Shane.
About with it. Yeah, yeah, even
Shane. Make up for his drop goal.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they go down the boring route. Stephen Jones gets the conversion and Wales lose 21-18.
Yeah. I believe that just about brings us through the game.
I think it does.
We've got any other points of interest before we move on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Nothing about the game, no. I mean,
anything not about the game?
I mean, I can tell you what was on BBC Two in... because we haven't got the broadcast to sort of...
No, sure.
Left, you know, I just went deep into sort of... shit that was also on telly this day.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So on BBC Two, up against this game was an old episode of In the Night Garden.
Okay.
Oh my God, yeah.
Okay.
Followed by a very old episode of The Pink Panther Show.
Wow.
As in the one where he's like in the live action car at the start, but he's animated. Yeah. Like the,
no, oh wow, old. Yeah.
Yeah. And on BBC One, just absolute classics. Homes Under the Hammer.
Okay. Sure. Solid. Solid.
And then a show called Dirty Tricks of the Tradesman, which sounds more sexy than
it
is.
Is it Dom Littlewood?
It's not Dom Littlewood. It's Chris Hollins shortly after his sort of Strictly Come Dancing pomp.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And, Friday night, though, later on that night, because it was on a Friday. Do you want to know who was on Jules that evening?
Oh, go on.
Feist, for starters.
Don't remember who that is.
Lamb of God, weirdly.
Wow, okay. On Jules Hollins.
Yeah. And Leanne Le Havas.
Right.
Which just was actually quite a good... Which is very 2011-y.
Yes.
But, you know, also kind of...
I expected it to be a lot worse. I mean, I forgot that 2011 had anything other than moves like Jagger and Adele, so...
Who would be on Jules Holland every week.
Yes.
Sure, yeah.
Is that the extent of it? Is that the extent... I suppose Friday morning, isn't it?
Friday morning is, fuck, you know, it is proper, like... There's a bit of bargaining on later.
Okay.
Like, it's pretty bad. I can tell you that Phil Vickery would become the first man to ever win both the Rugby World Cup and the MasterChef title the very next day.
The next day? On the day of the World Cup final?
On the day of the World Cup final.
Wow.
Phil Vickery reached his Everest.
Which is the bigger event for rugby?
I mean, I think they're close.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could deny they're close.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Christian Day is held above all... All World Cup winners.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. He is Northampton's finest player.
Yeah.
Ever.
Better than Martin Johnson as far Stephen as England Marks go.
Yeah. Better than Stephen Myler. Better than Stephen Myler.
Bon Iver was on that later with Jules episode as well, right. Just to get even more eclectic.
Yeah. That is a really diverse mix, isn't it?
It's a bit odd, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, In the Night Garden, Pink Panther, Daily Politics, and then probably
Bon Iver.
Program called GMT with George Alagaya, which I don't remember that.
It was sort of a precursor to. Oh no, no, am I? No, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of something else. Okay.
I mean, it is what it is.
No,
and then there was some Diagnosis Murder because obviously.
Of course. How could it not be? Okay, the number one film at the box office that week. John English Reborn. Yeah. Okay. There you are.
Ah, fair enough.
Remember the Three Musketeers?
Oh, with Orlando Bloom.
Orlando Bloom and who I can't stand. And what's her face? Mila Jovovich.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That was about, wow. I'd forgotten Orlando Bloom was in that because I forget about him constantly. I really don't like Orlando Bloom. I think he is both incredibly boring and a prick, which is a real tightrope to walk. Crazy stupid.
I hope he's not listening.
In fact,
I hope he is. To be honest, like I'm fine with him listening. Like, it's an extra person listening to this. And if he tweets about this, then we'll probably get a few people.
There was a really bland. I forgot what it had. Some generic title like Retaliation or some bullshit film he was in about 5 years ago now, maybe 2017. I want to say where it starred Noomi Rapace as this female spy who was trying to uncover blah, 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 like corruption in the CIA or something.
That's solid casting, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was all right. And I was sort of like 45 minutes in thinking, this is all right. You know, this is a solid little thriller, whatever. Orlando Bloom turns up and inside 5 minutes I've fallen asleep. That is the power of Orlando Bloom to me. He is the world's most boring man. He is mahogany made human. And yet he is somehow also a bit of a prick. I don't like Orlando Bloom. And thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Still hanging about in the charts was Judy Moody in the Not Bummer Summer, which I believe was about Lewis's daughter. The change up, the... Oh, sorry, I'm going through the box off mojo here. Should I stop?
There's some real weird left field film action around this time. Because The Lion King 3... Like, remember when they remade The Lion King, but it was in 3D? And people went to see that at a cinema. Mm. Shortly after the World Cup finishes is the arrival of The Adventures of Tintin. Mm. Remember that? The Spielberg fucking...
I watched that last year.
Did the kick weird. Not chart?
So, no. So, at number 99 in the UK box office
charts... Oh my
charts,
God, we're not going through all of them, are we?
No, at number 9 was a re-release of Kez, an official re-release of Kez, because they were able to capitalize on the misery of the previous week, which brought in a total of $129 at the box office.
Oh, nice. God.
So, hey, why bother re-releasing it in that case? But I feel like if we submitted the recording of this podcast to cinemas, we could outgrow that re-release of Cares.
Yeah, I probably could.
I think it's definitely worth a try.
Yeah. Like, are we in? We're doing this?
Yeah.
You know, what else have cinemas got to show at the moment? Oh, there's a huge backlog of fucking blockbuster movies that need to go out or anything, is there?
I'll tell you what, Josh, if that works and we get a mad, you know, $1 million revenue for this, Lee is going to be so pissed off at you.
I know. I'm taking my talent in the classic LeBron James style. I'll be taking my talents to South Beach.
We then have to release the Lee's episode on England France as a sequel.
Yeah,
and see how that does in comparison.
Yeah, that's the undercard.
Yeah,
but it'll come with a lot of hype the second time around, though. So you know,
that's
you'll
true.
You'll already have a sort of baked in audience. They'll always do a bit better,
or everyone will be done with it. You know, maybe. Everyone will have got bored of it. Like, we don't need a sequel to this.
I'm reading more about Dirty Tricks of the Tradesman, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds really mean, right? The description is hidden camera series.
Mm-hmm.
College lecturer Gillian from Berkshire sets up her lodger Desmond for a visit from a pretend rogue roofer, and a Hertfordshire man sets up his girlfriend.
So what's the setup?
I think the setup is they put hidden cameras in your house, and then a fake dodgy tradesman comes around. And then they basically try to con you into sort of agreeing to do a load of work and have you drive tarmacked or something.
Mm.
And then presumably the person who set you out comes out and goes, you fucking shithouse.
And so what can be achieved by that?
I don't think a lot. I think it only lasted one series.
You surprised me,
Sean. There was only 15 episodes. The final
never
episode,
made it to the box office.
Season finale was Roger uses smelly cheese and a bottle of water to persuade a teacher from Kent that he needs to pay several hundred pounds for unnecessary damp proofing.
Should we do a bonus episode where we watch this back and do a retrospective on that? Because
it's got to be on iPlayer.
Yeah.
So was it an actually quite good tradesman who came? Was it an actor?
Yeah, it was a fake tradesman a real good tradesman pretending to be a fake bad tradesman.
But what if it was a shithouse tradesman who was pretending to be a good tradesman?
Exactly.
You know, drum up the business so he could then be a shithouse tradesman to everyone else on TV. It's this kind of, how deep down does this hole go? Which is a question they asked after one tradesman came and dug a hole in their floor.
Dirty Tricks of the Tradesman Inception. That's where we're at.
That was the previous year in the box office.
Oh, I relate to this one. Pretend rogue episode 11. Pretend rogue plumber Roger tries to fool a 19-year-old who's caught up in his games console.
Playing Rugby Challenge 2.
Look, we've all been there.
Yeah. Not playing anyway. Rugby World Cup official video game. Yeah, should we do Man of the Match and Dig of the Day?
Probably, yeah.
Sure. Seems we're here.
Should we start with Dick of the Day? That feels like the place to begin.
Okay. Should I kick us off on this one?
Please do.
Okay.
So.
I mean, one option is obviously Romain Poit for forgetting that he's a referee, not a coach, not a winger or whatever. Another one is Quade Cooper for snapping his own ankles instead of anybody else's. That's not how sidestepping works. But frankly, I've just got to give it to James Hook.
Really,
I don't really have one specific reason. It just is James Hook. And that's the end of my TED Talk. A lot shorter than yours, Robbie.
This sort of like gradual decline of James Hook over the course of this tournament. Because I remember him not being terrible against South Africa.
Yeah.
But like,
he's a fine fullback.
But by the end, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Who's your dick of the day, Josh?
I think it's got to be James Hook. I don't think it could be anybody else. Like, you know, he just, I mean, unless you wanted to have the entire commentary team.
Yeah. Which, yeah, that's a very good point. Very good point.
Mine was kind of a three-way tie. Between James Hook's a very, very strong contender just for general antics, and then Phil Kearns for just being a Lydiot, and then beyond that we have I had to rewind the moment many, many times to find out. But after James O'Connor makes that break, and I was prepared to give man of the match to Robbie Deans for not picking Anthony Fayenga because I hadn't seen him on the bet. I am finger on the bench. I'm prepared to give man of the match to Deans for finally dropping him. And then out of nowhere, Ant Figure catches the ball and bombs a try scoring opportunity. And I know technically he could have given an assist, and Adam Ashley Cooper had to go and put the his name is spelled ack, and that's kind of the noise you had to make in watching it back. I know technically it should be Adam Ashley Cooper for bombing the try, but I choose to editorialise this and lay sole responsibility at the fingers of Anthony Fayenga. And hence my dick of the day, in order to complete tradition and close this off, because the last time I get the opportunity, and he did do something that was pretty dick of the day-ish because he did bomb a try, is to give it to the one and only Ant Finger.
I had a feeling you'd do that. I think it would have been wrong if you watched an Australia game that he actually played in and didn't give him dick of the day.
Yeah.
So well done, Ant Finger, on your full house.
That brings Anthony Fayenga. Actually, no, I'll keep the powder dry on how many he has.
Does that affect him
versus Martin Rodriguez in the... And frankly, James Hook is a late challenger now. James Hook has thrown himself into the conversation for the most dick of the day nominations over this tournament.
Wow.
Alongside Rodriguez and Anthony Fayenga. And there's a couple exciting of other players who are there or thereabouts. But yeah, so that brings that up. Should we move on to man of the match?
Imagine it not being Berrick Barnes.
Imagine it.
Yeah.
Like the standard of this game is so far below him.
He's
like,
the only one taking this game seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally the only player on the pitch.
If he does as much as think about what's in front of him and works a tiny bit harder than everyone else, he will completely dominate it.
Mm.
And he does that. So Berrick Barnes is the man of the match for me.
Yeah, Berrick Barnes is the man of the match for me.
Easy. Easy.
Yeah. That's the shortest man of the match conversation we've ever had, especially with three
the only on the player out of both sides that can honestly say, yeah, he had a really good game.
Yeah.
Is kind of the default.
Yeah.
That is the second three-way agreement unanimous man of the match we've had after Schottberger.
Amorosino got one with Rhiannon.
Oh, of course, Amorosino with Rhiannon. Yeah, yeah. So Schottberger with Gareth Mason and Amorosino with Rhiannon, and now Berrick Barnes, which really completes that trifecta. You know, those are the three most famous players. In
extremely sensible players.
Yeah. That's a back three.
Yeah. Two opposite ends of the spectrum there. Okay. I think that roughly brings us to the end.
I think it does.
This podcast.
We've nearly finished this podcast overall.
Almost to the end of the podcast overall.
Yeah.
We have now watched 47 of the 48 games from
this
World
Cup.
That's
mad, that is. That's mad. We've got one left.
Yeah.
Which one is it? Is it the...
It's a pool game, I think.
Okay.
We just decided to skip Georgia v Romania.
The silver final.
Yes.
Imagine if you did the final first and then did the bronze coin. Yeah.
Should we do that next? In the next World Cup we do, we'll work backwards.
Let's do it. Let's just start there.
Okay. Yeah.
So it leaves only the final between New Zealand and France.
I'm excited to watch this back.
Who wins? Who knows?
Yeah.
You decide.
Yeah, vote
text
now.
In. Yeah, text in.
Who's going to win? At Izzy Falau on Twitter and say who you think is going to win the game. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see everybody there for that.
Quickly, Josh, where can people find you? Where can people find your stuff if they've listened this far? I really need more on old TV schedules.
You need more of this. At Josh Gardner, at @ruck_mag on the Twitters, and you probably already know the Blood and Mud Rugby podcast, but if you don't, give it a listen. It's like this, but somehow even less about rugby.
Yeah, we said this when Lee was on. Everybody who listens to this definitely also listens to Blood and Mud. So I think you've basically got our entire listener base and more.
I was going to say, we've been out of like the Venn diagrams of our listeners is a circle.
It's a circle inside a slightly smaller circle.
Yeah, exactly. But Josh, thank you for coming on. This has
been a pleasure,
really. And like, I've listened to your podcast for a while. I said this to Lee as well, and you know, I obviously really enjoy it. So it's great to have
you on. Thank you very much,
man. And it's speak to you properly.
Indeed. Thank you for having me, gents. It's been fun to sort of remember that I gave myself some sort of low-level mind problems in 2011. So, you know, it's been educational, if nothing else.
Like Shantae Harpe did. That is a really dark joke. That is really dark. I'm sorry about that. Wow. Yeah, that's...
Allegations into booting Robbie off the podcast before the next episode.
That's right back to the kind of comedy material I was doing about the time when I was having my edgy phase. throw myself right back there.
I tell you what, going back onto my 2011 tweets, I deleted some.
There were
some edgy takes around that semi-final that I took back.
There is like material, like there is a stand-up routine I did that is online somewhere. And I don't want anyone to ever find it because I made jokes.
I'm looking it up now.
Please do not. Say,
this struck me as a it was nice little scavenger hunt
in the lead up to the Donald Trump's election. And I wish I've said too much. I did it in character as that was my whole bit. And it was I'm going to stop talking and end this now.
Bye.
I hope everyone has enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time for the final between New Zealand and France. Thank you very much. We'll see you then.
Goodbye.
So long.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.